Welcome in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Guys, I'm so excited about today's show. I got to tell you, we got an old friend back with us. Not only that, but we're going to talk about some of the most favorite topics that you've ever talked about, I've ever talked about, we've ever talked about. We're going back to the paranormal. We're going back to some of the strange and unusual. And we're going back to the Northeast, which is one of my favorite topics. Let's just get to it. Let's talk about our buddy that's back with us. Jeff Belanger's back with us. Award-winning author, podcaster, storyteller, adventurer, and explorer of the unexplained. This man is multi-talented. You've seen him on your screens. You've seen him in books. You've seen him. You've probably seen him on a stage near you. You've seen him at conventions. He's got more than a dozen books, including The World's Most Haunted Places, The Fright Before Christmas, his memoir, The Call of Kilimanjaro, which is a great memoir. If you don't have it, go get it. We've got links in the description of this program so you can go check out all of Jeff's books. He's the award-winning, Emmy-nominated host, writer, and producer of the New England Legends series on PBS and Amazon Prime. He also hosts the New England Legends weekly podcast, which I believe you can still get right in the Darkness Radio app. So go get it.
I think you can. Thank you.
Yes. Go check that out in the Darkness Radio Apple app. It's garnered over 6 million downloads since it was launched in 2017. He provides live programs and performances to audiences all over the world. If you're in the Northeast, you could pretty much see him wherever he is around the Northeast. Check his website. We have a link to his website in the description of this program to see where he is around the Northeast. He's been the writer and researcher for almost every episode of Ghost Adventures on the Discovery Channel since the show premiered in 2008. He's the founder and publisher of the Shadow Zine, and we'll have a link for that as well. And he's been a guest on hundreds of radio and television networks and programs, making regular appearances on the Discovery Channel's Shock Docs, the History Channel's The Unexplained with William Shatner. Plus, he's been featured on networks and programs like the Travel Channel, PBS, NECN, Living TV UK, the CBS News Early Show, CBS Sunday Morning, Sunrise 7 in Australia, Fox, NBC, ABC, and CBS affiliates, NPR, the BBC, Australian Radio Network, and Coast to Coast AM. Let's welcome him back to Darkness Radio, Jeff Belanger.
Wow, that took a while. Is there any time left?
No, we're done. Well, I'll see you later,
thanks,
buddy.
Okay, great talking to you,
Tim. Yeah. By the way, this book right here, Wicked Strange, Your Guide to Ghost Monsters, Oddities, and Urban Legends from New England with photography by Frank Grace, is what we're talking about today. This is a gorgeous book, Jeff, by the way.
Thank you so much. Yeah, brand spanking new. It's still not potty trained. So
yeah,
watch
I know.
Yourself.
I tried to make it go and it wouldn't. It peed all over my floor. But boy, it was gorgeous while it was doing it.
Yeah, yep. Thank you so much. Yeah, full color. It's great. And it's been such a labor of love. That's really been like 12, 13 years in the making. Mm-hmm. Because what started, you mentioned, so the New England Legends television series started on PBS, but making TV shows is very expensive and time consuming. And so there were so many stories to cover, we started the podcast where we could create these like little audio documentaries, these fun sort of vignettes about different weird stuff around New England. And we cover ghosts and UFOs and monsters and cryptids and anything strange, roadside oddities, eccentrics. And then Frank Grace and I have been friends for about 13 years now. Each year we produce the Haunted New England Calendar.
Yes.
And so I was like, Frank, we got to do a book. I got all these stories. You got all these photos. Like, we've got to do a book. And so it's pretty cool to have it finally come together.
You know, I wonder with all the calendars you produce with Frank and everything, as you're starting to put the calendars together and you're looking at the photography and the rich jobs that he does there, is the book already forming in your mind? Are you thinking of the different locations you can put together with him and put in this book? Because you've got a lot in here just from the states that you put together.
Yeah, there's over 100 stories. And we were, so New England is six states, right? It's Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut. And we were meticulous. It was like the NFL draft or the MLB draft, right? We're like, okay. We got to make sure. I don't want anyone from Maine saying, oh, this is a Massachusetts book. I don't want anyone from Rhode Island saying, oh, this is a Connecticut book. So we wanted to make sure we had equal number of stories from each state. We wanted to make sure we had equal types of stories. So we've got a UFO story from each of the six states. We've got like a cemetery safari story from each of the six states. We've got haunts. We've got cryptids. We've got all kinds of weirdness. And so part of the challenge was, how do we be geographically fair and topic fair to each of the six states? But yeah, working with Frank, so this dude is always clicking. And I've been a fan of his since before I met him. You know, I would follow his work online and look at his photography. And Frank tells a whole story with a photo. And he just does this amazing work. First time I met him was actually at the Lizzie Borden House in Fall River. And I was really excited because I knew he was going to be there. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait to meet Frank Grace. This is so cool. And I walked up and he was literally hunched over clicking a picture or something. And I was like, Frank, man, I got to tell you, I'm a big fan of your work. Your photography is incredible. And he just looks at me deadpan and he points to the shutter button on his camera and he goes, I just push this button. The camera really does most of the work. And and I was like, oh, I bet we're going to be friends. And we were. We have been. We started talking and I said, what about doing a calendar? He's like, oh, that'd be amazing. And so, you know, it started there. But yeah, no, sometimes his photos are so good. I'm like, well, we got to cover that story because the photo's that good,
yeah.
You know? And so, although sometimes too, like there's stories I've covered where there's nothing to photograph anymore. It's just, it's all long gone. So, you know, those are mostly not in the book.
That's kind of sad though, too, when you think about it, when you think about some of the areas of the country that have either been lost to time, gone away. There's one particular story where I'm just thinking, oh, you brought up a fear of mine when I was reading the book about being trapped in a coffin and having to have the glass top on it.
Yeah, yeah.
I forget the name of
Timothy Clark Smith.
Yes.
Yeah.
I that trauma is still fresh with me, and now I'm thinking I have to have the glass top on the coffin. I have to be. I forget the name of the phobia. It's
taphophobia.
Yeah, taphophobia. I'm thinking now I have to have the glass. And Timothy Clark had the hammer in one hand. He had the chisel in the other.
Yeah.
I got to have that now, and I got to have the glass top, and I got to be ready to be launch myself out of the coffin now. But then you bring up something that grossed me out even more. Do you want to tell people what it is in the bottom of that coffin?
Oh.
When you tried to look down into it?
Oh, okay. Got it. So, okay. That's half the story you told. So, yes, he had the glass top coffin, had the hammer and the chisel in there just in case you weren't around when he's tapping on the glass going, excuse me, not dead yet, right?
Right.
But he had a tomb built. And this is the craziest part. When you go to this little cemetery in the middle of Vermont, it's a very pretty, well-maintained cemetery, and his grave is not marked, but there's this hill you cannot miss. And at the top is this window that looks down 6 feet to his glass-topped coffin. And that's that was to make sure that should he get all the way into the ground, you could still look and check on him all the way down there. And so when I went there, keep in mind, he died in the late 1800s.
I like how this guy thinks, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
he's just checking all the boxes. He's like, all right, we. And so so we went there. I mean, he'd been in the ground, I don't know, 130 years or something like that. And there was some moisture underneath the glass, and it's foggy because it's old glass now, and it's flat on the ground, exposed to all the weather and sun and everything. And so I went there and I took my iPhone, which has a very flat little camera, and I set it down on the glass and I moved it around. And then I had this like 2000 lumen flashlight, and I put that on, and then I covered the whole thing with a sweatshirt, so I blocked out all the other light. And then I just sort of reached in blindly and started clicking pictures. Because that literally is the best look you're going to get, better than being there and looking with your eyes.
Right.
And when we looked down, I was like, oh, it's just filled with moss. All this moss grew in like different directions. So couldn't quite see all the way down there. But I imagine some of that light just got to his face, you know, and he was like, oh, they're finally checking on me. Thank you. Well done.
You know, so honestly, Jeff. Okay, so Beer City Bruiser and I, we had these discussions on Supernatural News about, we don't want to think about it, about being in the grave after this whole thing's over, because there's two words that absolutely make us, just give us the willies. And the willies, by the way, it comes up in this book as well.
It does, yeah.
But it's the words bone soup.
Oh, yeah, that's gross.
Yeah, you know, if you think about it, coffins aren't watertight.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, the worms get in eventually, yeah.
Yeah, so does water.
That's why the ground sinks eventually.
Yeah.
You give it enough time, like the graves sort of sink down because the caskets rot, the bodies rot,
yeah.
And the ground's just like, whoop, and you're like, yeah, that's bone soup.
And a lot of times in the Midwest here, there's a lot of soaking rain.
Yeah.
And a lot of times if they have to ever exhume a coffin and they open that coffin, there's a lot of water in those coffins.
Oh, delicious.
Bone soup.
Bone soup. Wow. I didn't think of that. That's gross. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, yeah, a little something to go to bed with tonight.
Listen, since we're in caskets underground, there's another story that I covered in Cranston, Rhode Island. There was the Cranston State Hospital. These hospitals repeat all over the country. You know, an asylum hospital built in the 1800s, did good and noble work, but took care of people that couldn't take care of themselves and had no one else. And so when you died in these places, if you had loved ones who could claim your body, that's fine. They would take you and put you wherever. If you didn't have anyone, then they literally just put you into a mass grave on the grounds. If you're lucky, you got a number, right? The unlucky, it was just there's somewhere out there. So there was a story where a young man died in his 20s, and he had been in the ground about a year, and his sister had discovered he was there and had passed away. So she went to the superintendent and said of the Cranston State Hospital and said, "Hey, I'd like to take my brother's body exhumed and brought over to our family plot," which is it's happened before. It's no problem. The request is granted. The funeral director comes and starts to dig up the casket. And that's when they notice that the top of the casket had been sort of broken into. And when they looked in, the head was missing from the corpse.
Yes.
And so everyone's got the heebies and the jeebies. And then what they suspect happened, what most likely happened is you've heard of ghouls, right? So
yeah.
Today we think of ghouls as ghosts, but back in the 1800s, a ghoul was a living person who would go and snatch bodies from cemeteries. Usually, by the way, for a medical study, they'd sell it to a college or to doctors who would perform, you know, autopsies or, you know, dissect the bodies. So what a ghoul would do in certain cases was because it's, you know, you're in a public space, it takes a long time to dig all that up. Mm-hmm. They would just dig around the head and they'd crack the casket open and they'd take a fish hook, stick it underneath the jaw, tie it to a rope, tie it to a horse, smack the horse's butt, and the horse would literally drag the body out, breaking it all up through that little hole. Sometimes the body's stubborn, Tim, and doesn't quite come out of the hole, but the head did. And so they very quickly buried it all back and did indeed take the head.
There's your CTE subject.
another thing for you to worry about besides bone soup and being buried alive is your corpse being snatched.
Oh my God. You know, I saw something on a related note. I saw something that's equally ghoulish and scary in modern day. There's something that there's modern day ghouls, you know, that actually take bodies for quote unquote medical study, but they're actually selling bodies online.
Yeah, that's my side hustle, Tim. Times are hard.
Well, I'll be sure to stay away from you when I'm feeling not quite right.
Yeah, you know, times are tough. We do what we got to do.
Yeah, but there's a modern day body hustle right now. And they're not selling to, they think they're selling to medical facilities or medical schools or not. It's just a body farm they're selling to.
The Tim Dennis School of Medicine. Spelled medicine wrong. Well, it's not really, but I do.
M-E-D-I-S-I-N. Yeah, medicine. Yeah.
Medicine. Don't worry about it. Don't ask too many questions.
No.
Just trust me.
Hey,
look, there have always been people that desecrate graves. It's a universal taboo. It's like it's the one thing almost every culture can agree on, that you're not supposed to disturb the dead. Ghouls also, they didn't just snatch bodies for medical study. Sometimes they were looking for jewelry. People used to bury their grandma with all the diamonds and gold, and they were like, phew, this is an easy payday. Snatch it and just rebury it. Maybe no one will even notice. Because who's going to check?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're almost afraid to do that because we'd think that the people at the funeral home would grab it.
Or it'd be weird if they didn't, if we're honest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when you're gone and there's probably like a signal like in baseball,
yeah,
like where the grave diggers are going to put it down on the ground. And there's probably like a one of these and they know, OK, yeah, little point from the eye means there's still jewelry on this one. As soon as everybody's gone, just go ahead, take the jewelry off, pawn it and do your job.
Yeah.
And you got a tip. There's your year end bonus.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. Weird times.
But
listen, for the record, don't bury me with anything expensive. It's silly.
Right.
Do bury me with a phone.
Yes. Yeah.
Because That could be kind of cool. You know what I mean?
A phone and a magnetic backup battery so that I have, so that I have a way to get a hold of you, even if it's 100 years in the future and somehow I've discovered immortality or vampirism, that I can still get up and call somebody.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing over there? What's going on? Oh, Tim? I thought you were dead.
I'm stuck.
That'd be great. That's a good idea.
Right? Because they don't have the bell anymore. There's no bell to ring. No. One less bell to answer. I think the Fifth Dimension said that at one time.
Yeah. And then one less bell to answer. Yeah. And then when the phone rings and you see the caller ID, you're like, impossible. No. Improbable.
That's right. Improbable. You can't keep a good Rasputin down, my friend. That's right. You just can't. That's for sure.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, there's, your book has brought up many, many, Wicked Strange has brought up that phobia again, that fear.
Oh, so glad to help. Hey, let's just put a bow on this and we'll literally lay
we'll
it to rest.
On. Yep.
So turns out, I did look into this, if you were placed in a casket and buried underground, you would have between 30 and 60 minutes of air.
Really?
So, 60 minutes if you stay really, really calm and breathe slow, which would be easy, right? Mm-hmm. When you realize you're 6 feet under in a casket. 30 minutes if you're panicked and huffing and puffing. So at best, you got an hour. Enjoy your time.
So if you're panicked and digging quick, you've got 30 minutes to try and swim to the surface.
You're just going to use up all that oxygen.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if you hold your breath and just slowly dig, you might make it.
Slow in, slow out. You got an hour.
Hmm. So you would hope they would hear the clawing and the knocking as they're putting you down in the ground. Yeah.
But I always have my headphones in. I'm listening to music when I'm doing that job.
Oh, good to know.
Help, get me out of here. Oh, no. this song's a banger. I love this one. It's my jam.
Banging. Wait, speaking of banging, why something interrupted my beat?
Yeah, the beat's off. That's weird.
That's strange. Never heard this remix before.
Yeah, odd.
Odd. The one question I did have, you were mentioning earlier that you tried to balance between states. So obviously, like all good albums, there's got to be cuts that were left off the album, right?
Oh, hundreds.
Okay. So is there any from any particular state that were left off the book that you went, I really wish I would have thrown this one in?
So our pat answer for that is like volume two, and that's the thing. People who love this stuff are be like, I can't believe you didn't include blah, right? Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And there's a ton. We didn't include most, if we're honest. We were trying to pick highlights and pick things that, deeper cuts, stuff you might not have heard about. So sure. There were things that we were just like, there's no room for this one. We literally had a spreadsheet going. Frank and I had this spreadsheet of like a shared doc, and we're going through it and it was like a draft, it would be like, oh, this is a good story. He's like, yeah, but there's not much to photograph. Okay, we'll drop it, or this is a killer photo. Let's make sure we do the story. There's tons of places that we left off. And sometimes like it's my own. It's not fair, but hey, that's life. It's my own boredom with a location. Like I've covered it so many times. I'm like, let me do something new. Mm-hmm. You've probably heard me talk about certain stories like Mercy Brown, the Rhode Island vampire.
Yes. Yeah.
I've talked about her in other books. I've talked about her in person and live shows and stuff like that. And she is so very notable and worthy of the story. But I've just done it a lot. So I'm kind of like, all right, well, so we did a different vampire. We did a different Rhode Island vampire, as a matter of fact. So, there's other ways to do it. And so someone might be like, I can't believe you left Mercy Brown out. I hear you. But if you've followed my other work, I've given her plenty of ink over the years.
Right. Correct.
Yeah.
I tell you what, Jeff, let's take our break here. When we come back, I want to get to some of the ones that you included in Wicked Strange that maybe you threw in maybe for the first time, some of the ones you're more excited to get to that you wanted to give some exposure to, some pub to, that you said to yourself, hey, I'm kind of excited that we got a chance to get to this legend and lore of the Northeast of New England, because really this doesn't get any attention at all. And maybe this is, I don't want to say virgin territory at all, but maybe it's newfound territory to a lot of people, especially the rest of the nation, to get to know the New England area. So that's what we'll do. In fact, I have the book right here and I'll show it to you guys. Here it is right here. Wicked Strange is the name of it. See, it's a beautiful book right here. Frank Grace is the photographer on this. Jeff Belanger is the author. It's Wicked Strange, your guide to ghosts, monsters, oddities, and urban legends from New England. And again, we have a link in the description of this program. We've also got links to Jeff's websites and how you can get to see him around the country so that you can get an autographed copy. Can you get an autographed copy as well at the website, Jeff?
No.
Okay. All right. All right. Then you
thanks
just
for
have,
asking.
You just have to go see him and get an autographed copy.
But that's my rule, man. See me anywhere. Bring any old book you want. I'm happy to sign it.
There you go. Well, that's perfect then, too. Then they get to meet you and get an autographed copy that way. That's the best way to do it. So when we come back, we'll talk about some of the more unique stories out of Wicked Strange with Jeff Belanger right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. My guest, Jeff Belanger, one half of the team that has come up. I got to give credit to Frank Grace here, Jeff.
Yes,
that's what I got.
Yes. Course.
One half of the team that's come up with Wicked Strange. Here it is right here. Your guide to ghosts, monsters, oddities, and urban legends from New England. It's an excellent book, folks. Gorgeous book at that. Perfect for, is it, I don't want to call this a coffee table book, Jeff.
Yeah, no, leave it out. Leave it, or you know what? Leave it by the toilet. I'd be honored.
Oh, no, it's better than a toilet book. A toilet book is like a small compact book that you can, don't put this near your toilet. It's way too gorgeous to be a toilet book, that's for sure.
Before phones, this is what we did.
You know what I'm going to do for the people who are watching on video? Here, let me show you. Okay, so here's the Westford Knight. Okay.
Yeah.
Take a look at this. If I can get this in the shot here, you tell me, Jeff, because I'm not.
Yeah, it looks good. Just a little to your right.
A little to my right.
Yeah. Like keep going. There it is. Perfect.
Okay, so take a look at that photography there.
Yeah, Frank's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, there's some shots here in this book that are absolutely breathtaking that Frank has done an amazing job with. And I mean, the combination of Jeff's storytelling and Frank's photography in this book will keep you absolutely captivated throughout the entire book. I mean, it's just some amazing, amazing storytelling. So I want to tip my cap to both of you.
I appreciate it. Part of the point also is that we wanted people to be able to open any page. They're short. So you don't have to read it in order. It's totally fine. If you want to skip around to any story at all, flip through. If a photo grabs your attention, read that one first. Yep. It's totally fine. Each one is an encapsulated thing all unto itself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those books that's got legend, lore, ghost stories. You could call them cryptid stories, like you said, UFO stories. And as you said earlier in the program, you've tried to balance those stories throughout the book between the states so that you could grab it from any state. But I love the unusual stories as well. The ones that kind of jump out and you go, oh, that's unusual. Or that's, you know, some of the stories that have the Twilight Zone feel to them. There's a story about a heartbreak house. I know that one got me. The Stephen Smith Heartbreak House in Lincoln, Rhode Island.
Yeah. Stephen Smith had literally won a lottery, and he was trying to court a Providence socialite, you know, an urban socialite, and trying to impress her. He literally had this mansion built, and he brought her out to it to surprise her. Like, look at what I've done with my fortune. I've built you this beautiful mansion, and it is gorgeous. And she gets out there, and the story goes, she looked and said, oh, it's lovely, but I could never live out here. And that's how it ended. Moral of the story, you know, don't go dropping a lot of money on someone you're crushing on.
Right.
Until you're certain it's going to pay off in the long run. You know, maybe start with dinner next time.
That's
the takeaway. One of the weirdest stories you had asked earlier, like what's an obscure one that's really strange. Tim, this one blew my mind, and I've literally stood in front of this grave and pondered it, and it is baffling. Okay. So, if one wanted to see an ancient Egyptian mummy, one would expect to go to, I don't know, Egypt, right?
Right.
Or Vermont, it turns out. There's a crazy story that dates all the way back to 1883 BC, my man.
Whoa.
BC. There was a young prince named Amenher Kepeshef who died around age 2 or 3 and was buried in Egypt, as Egyptians were. But he was a prince. He would have been in line for the throne had he lived to adulthood. In the late 1800s AD, Egypt fever gripped the world. You know, they were uncovering tombs and everybody wanted a mummy. Mm-hmm. So mummies were being pulled from the ground and sent to museums and all kinds of other places all around the world. Well, there was a museum in Middlebury, Vermont, run by Henry Sheldon, and Henry wanted a mummy for himself. So he had heard about this young boy's mummy, and he said, I'll buy it, have it shipped up here to Vermont. So the thing is, as soon as you pull a mummy out of the ground in Egypt, which is very arid and dry, which helps preserve the body, and then put it on a ship on the ocean where there's tons of moisture. Well, decomposition just picks up right where it left off.
Yeah.
And by the time it got to New York and then from New York up to Vermont, when he got this box, it was just a mushy mess of, I think the word he used was bone soup. No, that's your
bone
word.
That's my word, yeah.
No, this, I think accurate. This would have been bone stew.
Ew.
thicker than the soup. So he said, I can't put this on display in my museum. It doesn't even look like a person. So he puts it up in the attic and they move on with their lives. And eventually, Henry Sheldon died. And then later, after he died in 1907, years later, a new general manager is running the museum in Middlebury, and they're cleaning some stuff up, and they uncover this mummy, a prince, in the attic.
Whoa.
And he said, this is a human being, right? This is a human being. Like, this is not right at all.
Yeah.
So the best he could offer is he had a family plot in the giant cemetery in the center of town, and he said, I'm willing to give up some of my space in the family plot. I think we should reinter him into the ground and put a headstone up. So when you go to the Middlebury, Vermont cemetery, there's one headstone. It's literally got some hieroglyphs on it. And it says, ashes of Amenher Kepeshef, age 2 years, son of Senraset III, king of Egypt, and his wife Hathonhotep, 1883 BC. And so it's got the hieroglyph for a soul, which is like a bird, mm-hmm. on one side, and it's got a Christian cross on the other, which is hysterical because at the time he died, that was almost 2,000 years before the time of Jesus. But whatever, the odds of him being a Christian would have been extremely remote.
Yeah, right.
But there's an ancient Egyptian mummy buried among all the others right there in central Vermont.
How ironic that the director of the museum does the Christian thing and puts an Egyptian prince in the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but actually I appreciate it because it's not right to keep him in a box in an attic. Like that
right.
is a human being with parents and everything else. And,
yeah.
You know, again, this theme of disturbing a place of the dead, whenever you do it, right, it gets creepy.
Yeah.
The dead are supposed to stay buried.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. The other, you know, I wanted to continue the odd theme that I loved in your book about spurned lovers and the whole learning your lesson through love. There was a lover's leap story in there in the book too that I absolutely laughed my ass off because I thought, you know, if every guy learned that lesson from lover's leap, I think the male race would be a male race. Listen to me, the male species, male gender, whatever you want to say. I think we'd all be better off.
So there's this right near Newport, Rhode Island. There's this big old crack in a cliff and it goes down. I think it goes down something like 50 feet. If you fall, you're very, very most likely going to die. Right. If you fall into this crack. Now, it's a crack. So at one end, it's sort of skinny. And at the far end, it's probably about 10 feet. But somewhere, you know, and then it goes back like a triangle. So somewhere around the middle, it could be like 5 feet, 4 feet, whatever. So the story goes that Newport was a summer getaway for the wealthy. It's that now. It's been that forever. And back in the 1800s, there was some wealthy Newporters, and there was a young man that was just smitten with one of the socialite girls, and just followed her around like a puppy all summer, trying to woo her, trying to win her over, you know, take her to dances, ask her to dance, all that other stuff. You know, finally they're going for a walk by the cliffs, and he's had enough. And she says to him, you know, look, prove your love to me and jump lover's leap, jump over the cliff. And so he takes a deep breath. He sighs, he backs up a little bit, he runs and he leaps to the other side, makes it, turns around and basically dumps her. After all summer, she had finally sort of relented, like, all right, this guy's jumped through every hoop I've put him through. I guess I'll go out with him now. And then he did the very last test, only to be like, I don't think I want to be with someone that's going to make me jump literally across lover's leap where I could have died. But I proved it, and now I'm moving on.
That's right. That's right. If you can't do the same thing for me that I do for you, well, then we're moving on, right?
Yeah. That was it. Yes. Lesson learned.
Lesson learned. I love that story. I don't know why I love it so much, but I love it. It's a lesson for life, right?
Well, this, I mean, there's so many, like we can relate, right? Like we've all tried. There's been people where you're like, oh, come on, I think it would be great together. And it's one thing if like the very first thing they say is, hey, I'm not interested. No, thank you. And you're like, oh, okay, well then I'll just stop right there. That's that, right? Yeah. No problem.
Yeah.
But when they're receptive and you're the you're admiring someone and they're sort of dragging it out, maybe because they like the attention, maybe because they're just not quite sure. I don't know. In my experience, you know right away. You're either into someone or you're not. Right. Like they're not going to wear you down. Do you want to be worn down?
No, no,
no. You want to be like, oh, you're interesting. You're interesting too. Let's hang out. Let's talk. Let's get to know each other.
Yeah.
Maybe we can mess that up later, but at least in the beginning, like, right. You know, oh, well, he's not going away. I guess I should date him.
There's another story. And again, I want one more quirky, odd love story, and then I'll move off the subject.
Sure.
In New Hampshire, there's a sign that just says, chicken farmer, I still love you.
Yes.
What is that all about?
That's on Route 103 in Newbury, New Hampshire. And it's one of those just rocks that's almost like a billboard. It just happens to face the road. In 1973, there was a young lady named Gretchen Rude who lived in the house right across the street from that rock. She was a senior in high school, and her house is like one of those sort of open yards. And in the back, they had some tomatoes and they had a few chickens. And someone in school had a big old crush on Gretchen. And one night with paint, not spray paint, but like, you know, a brush, painted chicken farmer, I love you on that rock. And Gretchen would see it every single time she would, you know, leave her driveway. The love was unrequited. They did not get together. Didn't happen. And so time passed all the way to 1990, and the sign faded quite a bit. In 1990, it mysteriously reappeared with one new word. Chicken farmer, I still love you. That's 17 years later. She's moved on. She went to college. She went away, right? The whole thing. I still love you. And now we're talking almost restraining order, right?
Right. Yeah.
So all of a sudden, everybody's like, whoa, that's quite a message there. 7 years later, 97, some people in town, newcomers were kind of uppity. They're like, oh, this is graffiti. We should paint over it. And they petition the state. The state comes and just paints it tan, like the color of the rock. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the folks in town get really upset. And they're like, whoa, 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 that's our rock. How dare you touch it? They circulate a petition saying, no, we want that there. They give it to the state, who says, fine, we'll never touch it again. Someone went and repaid in it once again. Chicken farmer, I still love you. And not only that, they maintain it. It has now been over 50 years. It was always graffiti, but now it's a landmark that's protected. And it's this sweet little message of unrequited love.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, I know. And you're like, it's been 50 years, like more than 50 years. It's time to let this go.
Yeah.
But literally, it's a landmark, Tim. Like when you're driving up 103, there's families that know they're going on road trips or whatever. They're like, oh, chicken farmer, 45 minutes to go and we'll be there. You know what I mean? Like it's literally a landmark.
Take a ride at the chicken farmer sign. And
Yeah. Yeah. There's a great restaurant right over there. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a great place to stop. Yeah. That is bizarre.
Yeah.
Because it borders on stalkerish, but at the same time, you're like, oh, isn't that sweet? No, somebody painted a sign.
Yeah, multiple times over decades. Yeah. And that's the thing, though, right? These things stick out. And what I love, okay, so it started for me with haunts. You know, you look at a haunted place, someone says that building's haunted. The next question out of your mouth is, why? Why is it haunted? And to answer that, you've got to go back in time, right? You've got to go back and say, well, who lived here? Who died here? What events took place? What happened on the land before, you know, before anyone lived here? And so you go through and you get those answers and you start to get this sort of understanding of how we got to be here talking about it being haunted. Well, that's sort of true of any oddity. Mm-hmm. You see a painted sign that says chicken farmer, I still love you. Well, there's a backstory there.
Yeah.
And I'm the kind of person that just loves to know the backstory.
Yeah.
I want to know, like, how did we get to this? And every oddity, every roadside attraction, every eccentric, UFOs, monsters, whatever, there was something that came before that led to the point where we're still talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You're right. The backstories are sometimes so fascinating that it keeps you riveted. And there's more to build on that backstory sometimes, you know? There's
absolutely, you know, yeah. No, it's such a fun way to look at your community. And my sincere hope is, even if you're not from New England or if you've never been here, I'm sure in your head, Tim, you know stuff around Minnesota that's like, oh, there's something like that here. There's
yes.
a, yeah. yeah. I mean, you got your UFO sites, you got your haunts, you got your, you know, roadside oddities are one of my favorite because someone just took it upon themselves to do something really weird and put it out there for all of us to see. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it sticks around to the point where it becomes part of a town's identity, which mm-hmm. is amazing.
Well, let's bring up one and then we'll get down to the stuff here on this show that we normally get down to. One that supposedly Minnesota and New England share, and I want to know why you can claim it over Minnesota, and that's Paul Bunyan.
Oh, I already know what you're going to say. Go ahead, say it.
So supposedly Paul Bunyan is supposedly ours, right?
Yeah.
It's supposedly Minnesota's, but is it Maine that claims that they
I'm about to really blow your mind. I believe Washington State also claims them. If you want to start a brawl, right, we can get here's the through line on this one,
okay.
Right? Any state where logging was a huge, huge industry.
Yeah.
Paul Bunyan's around, especially, you know, 150, 200 years ago, if logging was a huge industry where you are, Paul Bunyan's story gets kicked around. Mm-hmm. Maine, in this case, Maine claims him as their own. And I'm very aware Minnesota does. I believe Michigan might even lay claim, and I'm pretty sure like Washington State, all states with heavy logging industries. So I don't know. Prove me wrong.
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
you can't. You know, I can't prove you wrong either.
We've got a giant Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox sitting over, you know, northern Minnesota. Do you guys have that in New England?
We have a giant Paul Bunyan with the axe in Bangor. Yeah.
Oh, jeez. See, but
oh no, it's not Bangor. Where is he? He's in Portland, Maine.
But is yours bigger than ours?
Probably by 2 inches. I don't even know. That's just my ego talking. I'm
know,
not sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's huge.
Well, we got to measure him and see. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'd have to look that up.
Yeah. See.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Google it. I'm not sure.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
I got to get on the Google machine here and see. Let's see.
All right. Ask your next question. I'll Google it.
Okay. All right. So with that, we got to have our Paul Bunyan measuring contest now. But see that there's okay. So we'll get back to the gist of what.
Oh no.
What? Minnesota's bigger?
No, you're not going to like this at all.
What?
49 feet in Klamath, California.
What?
Oh, God.
That's the biggest one?
Yeah, 49 feet tall.
Oh, wait.
And this one says, here's the one in Minnesota. Oh, but he's kneeling down.
Yeah, he's kneeling down. So, you know.
So that's going to take tons of height off. If he had been standing, you probably would have won that.
Yeah, we probably would have. Yeah.
Too bad. Too bad.
But see, he's in reverence of the great state of Minnesota, which he loves the most. So,
right.
So it's obviously it's us.
And yet California has the tallest and Maine has its own. And so, yeah. So we're just going to have to agree to disagree
in
all these logging states.
We'll have to, I guess. obviously, you've got different UFO stories. Let's switch to aliens here. Betty and Barney Hill are featured in here. We don't have to go over that story. I think that's pretty much been trounced on a lot on different programs. We
sure.
don't have to cover that on this program, although it's a very good story. One that people can go to Wicked Strange and read. But I do want to talk about the first documented UFO in New England.
Yes.
Which was in Boston.
It was. Do you have the year in front of you?
The year.
1640.
The year was 1649. Oh, no. 1639.
So keep in mind, just to give you some perspective, Plymouth was 1620. The Pilgrims landed at Plymouth in 1620. 19 years later, we've got our first documented UFO sighting, and it happened in basically what is modern day downtown Boston. And it was chronicled by the governor of the time, Governor Winthrop, who had basically said, this is a story people are talking about. It's one paragraph. And he says, Mr. James Everett, a sane and sober man in good standing with his church, was on a lighter, which is a small like boat on Muddy River, which is a kind of like a feeding stream into the Charles River. And, you know, it's like modern day Back Bay, Boston. And he saw a glowing ball of light in the sky. He described it as looking like a swine or a pig. He's a pig farmer, so that was a familiar shape. Said he watched it for an hour move between Muddy River and, he said, Charlton, but that would be modern day Charlestown, which is like a mile and a half away, sort of just north of modern day Boston, like barely north. And he said for 1 hour, this glowing ball of fire went back and forth. And in that time, his boat should have traveled about a mile down the river just on its own. And he realized at the end of the hour, it hadn't moved. Hmm. And I just about paraphrased almost word for word the entire entry that the governor made. And it's got all the elements: missing time, right? It's got something unidentified. In 1639, there was nothing flying in the sky. We didn't have balloon flight. We didn't have any airplanes. There was nothing man-made that could fly,
right?
Especially not for an hour.
Right.
And yet, and so, like, you know, if it was just a flash in the sky, you say, well, maybe you saw a meteor or something like that. But it was an hour of watching this thing in the sky. And that's it. I wish I could tell you more, but that's all there is to it. And yet it's really amazing if you think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's profound.
Yeah, very much. Very much. Very much so. And at that time, 1639. Wow. I want to talk about going back to hauntings. I want to talk about New Hampshire and a place that you've been to, you spoke at, the haunted Mount Washington Hotel.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that place, because I've always wanted to go there and investigate. I never have.
So you've been to the Stanley.
Yes.
know that. I've been there with you. Yeah. It looks almost identical to the Stanley, but the Mount Washington is bigger. It's an even bigger hotel, but they look like they could be twins, just to give you some perspective. The Mount Washington Hotel, when it was built, there was some superstitions. There were these Italian artisans that there's two main staircases that get you upstairs. And they made sure that there was not the same amount of stairs on both sets, because they think that confuses the ghosts. But a guy named Stuckney built the place, basically spent the last of his fortune and didn't get to see it very long. He died something like a year later, and his widow would eventually go on to marry French royalty. And that's why they called her the princess. But she loved the place. Now, keep in mind, it was only open in the summers, because the winters up there are brutal. Now it's open year round. But back then it was just the summers. And she was famous for throwing these lavish parties. And she would look down over the balcony and see the dresses that the women were wearing, so she could make sure she was the best dressed. She could go back and put on something even fancier if she had to. And then eventually she passed away. And the story goes that she stayed there. She's the most common spirit. Ghost hunters captured something in they call it the princess room after her. When you check in now, there's a painting up on like a big old mural of her right on the wall, with a little balcony in front of it. That's just, you know, placed there for decoration. But she's sort of ever present in this building. When they used to close down for the winter, they would see her ghost roaming through. They would see lights on, even though it was supposed to be shut down for the winter. And it's one of those places that when you walk in, it's just like walking into the Stanley. It's a time warp. You know, you're back there in like the 1920s and 19 teens, just sipping a cocktail and looking around at this opulent place and imagining what it must have been like to actually be there.
Huh. Does it have that same kind of lighter vibe to it? That same kind of lighter feeling, not necessarily, you know, kind of ominous, but just kind of a nice relaxed type vibe?
Yeah, I like it there. I mean, I think it's very, very similar to the Stanley, where you're just kind of like, you know, this is a cool place to chill out. And it's setting too. I can't stress, like, you know, Frank took a photo of it. It sits right at the base of the Mount Washington Mountain, which is the tallest peak east of the Mississippi. It's this, you know, beautiful, beautiful setting. In the fall, it's gorgeous. In the winter with snow, it's gorgeous. In the summer, it's so green. You know, it's just absolutely breathtaking. The view from the Mount Washington and the view seeing the Mount Washington from just about every angle.
Very cool. Very cool. The book we're talking about here, folks, I want to show you one more time here on video. Here it is. It is called Wicked Strange, Your Guide to Ghosts, Monsters, Oddities, and Urban Legends from New England. My guest here is Jeff Belanger, who we're talking to, and Frank Grace takes the photos in the book here, which are absolutely gorgeous. The Haunted Piano of Gardner Lake is a story which, again, we talk about haunted objects a lot on the show.
Yeah.
This is a bizarre story of a haunted object.
Yeah, this is it's really cool. Frank has a story when he went there to take pictures of the lake. Some kids were fishing and they're like, "Oh, hey, mister, what you taking pictures of?" And he's like, "Oh, the lake for, you know, this project I'm working on." And they go, "Did you know it's haunted?" And he said, "Oh, do tell." He goes, "Yeah, there's a haunted piano." I mean, he knew, obviously, because that's why he was there. But it's so cool that they still talk about it. So there's this big old lake, and there was a time when there was a house on one side of the lake. And the owner wanted to move it to the other side of the lake. It was just a better spot. And so an engineer came up with a brilliant idea. He said, "Here's what we're going to do. We're going to wait for it to be winter. You don't even have to take your stuff out. We're going to get the house up on skids, and we're going to slide it across the ice with horses and get it all the way to the other side of the ice. It's going to be amazing. Like, it's going to be a marvel of engineering, and it's going to so much easier than taking it apart and bringing it around by road and everything else." Because people did move houses. It was not unheard of. On ice, though, that's the other thing. So they start, the story goes that they start the process, and they get it, you know, like a third across, and it's just getting stuck. And so they decide, all right, we're gonna just take a break for the night. We'll try again in the morning. We'll get it all the way across, you know, no problem. Just ran out of daylight. What they didn't know was that overnight, there's a dam that that held back the water for the river that feeds this lake. And they had let the dam out for several hours, which ended up lowering the water level on the lake by just a couple of inches. But that created a gap between the ice and the lake, which is a disaster. The water, actually, when ice is on top of water, mm-hmm. it spreads out the distribution of the weight. But as soon as you create a gap, oh my gosh, it's like glass. And so this house all of a sudden just cracks through the ice.
Oh.
And they very quickly realized it was the side with the oven and the stove and the piano.
No.
You know, it was just too heavy on that one side, and it cracked into the ice. And almost immediately, you didn't need to be an engineer to know, like, this is a total loss. There's nothing we're going to do about this. We're not going to be able to pull it out of the hole. We're just, spring's going to come, the ice is going to melt, and that house is going to the bottom.
Oh.
So go in, take whatever you can take out of it. And that winter, people would ice skate around it and stuff. Like, there's postcards of people ice skating around the house. And then, sure enough, spring came and down it went and eventually rotted away. They could get a lot of things out, but they couldn't get that piano out of the house. And it went to the bottom, and people still report phantom piano music that they'll hear in the air and then can't seem to trace the source to it.
And that's it, and that's that. Oh man, can you imagine just sitting there watching your house slowly disintegrate into a lake?
Oh, or just what the crack must have been the worst thing.
Yeah.
And this old postcard, we didn't use the postcard, but I mean, it's wedged down. You could just look at that and go, "Yep, that's not going anywhere at all ever, except down when the ice melts." It was but you know, think about it. Had they pulled it off, that what a hero that engineer would have been like, "I'm so smart. I'm so smart. I got this."
I'm a genius.
I'm so smart. I got this house all the way across the ice and on the other side, and boom. I mean, we had to slow it down. It was like playing hockey with the house. And then I total loss because I'm an idiot.
There's no off position in the genius switch, that's for sure. There's a tale in the book about Vermont's sweetest cemetery, which I didn't know existed, but it's there, and it's kind of an ingenious little thing. Will you tell us about?
It's also one of two cemeteries in Vermont, only two that I'm aware of. Not Vermont, all of New England. It's one of two cemeteries where the dead can return.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. All right, stay with me.
Okay.
So the one we're talking about in Waterbury, Vermont, is it's not very old. It's only been there since 1997. But this cemetery was built because a couple of geniuses named Ben and Jerry made some really amazing ice cream. And they started in the town of Burlington, but they got so big so fast, they had to build this big old factory in Waterbury, Vermont, just, you know, a few miles away. And Ben & Jerry's was so successful because they took chances with flavors. They did crazy things. And some of those flavors didn't make it. So in 1997, they started holding funerals for the flavors that didn't make it. And man, when you go there, there's now like, I don't know, there's probably like two dozen headstones in this little cemetery burial ground. And they literally bury their words, dearly depinted. And they put up a headstone. It is a real stone with a marker and a little poem saying, you know, here lies like Ethan Almond ice cream, you know, and didn't quite make it or whatever. However, if there's enough demand, if fans, you know, scream and holler enough, they have been known to resurrect some of those dead flavors and bring them back for another round. So it's not impossible to have a resurrection in the sweetest cemetery in all of New England. You're probably wondering about the other cemetery,
yeah,
where the dead return. That one's in Maine, and that's another author and another story. You'd have to ask him.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
And then let's leave people tonight with a little bit of a scary story about werewolves. I know there's one about a French werewolf. Loup-garou,
right?
Yeah.
Well, the Rogueru is the one in New Orleans. Loup-garou, I believe it is.
Yeah.
So in Woonsocket is a heavily French area. A lot of French immigrants came there and settled, and so that's, you know, there's a lot of heritage there. That story dates back to when they were building a church. There was enough people that they were trying to build a bigger church. And it's kind of slow going, and there's this mixed story about like a deal with the devil where the priest is praying and the prayers are answered, but not in a way he'd like. This demonic horse basically becomes this beast of burden and really helps the process along. But the story goes, you have to keep the bridle on the horse. If you ever take it off, then the demon within the horse is going to be free. And that's that, and it's going to feed. And the story goes that the foreman stuck to it, but then one day he was sick, and someone else took the horse to the water and said, "Oh, it's such a hot day, I should let this horse drink." Takes the bridle off, and all of a sudden, the gates to hell opens up, and this man becomes literally the Woonsocket werewolf. And the horse never comes back, the man never comes back, but now there's this cave where there wasn't one before that they believe was an entrance to hell. And the werewolf, you know, creates other werewolves as people go looking for him. So it's the Rhode Island werewolf that dates back to actually trying to build a church.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I tell you, Jeff, the book is a good one. Here it is. It's pretty great. You're going to want to take a look at it. Frank takes some wonderful, amazing pictures. Frank Grace is your photographer and cohort in crime in this book. Wicked Strange, Your Guide to Ghosts, Monsters, Oddities, and Urban Legends from New England. It's available right now. We have a link in the description of this program. We also have links to Jeff's other books and a link to the Shadow Zine. Tell people about the Shadow Zine real quick.
Yeah, so Shadow Zine, I started back in February of this year. Mm-hmm. Dude, you know how it is. There's like 8 billionaires that control the internet now.
Yeah.
You know, like the people that own the biggest social media companies are billionaires, and I feel like there's an understanding we're being manipulated and controlled through this thing, mm-hmm. and it's not good for us. And so I was like, what can we do? And my answer was to go back to where I started. I started in zines, right? That was the time when media companies were merging, and there was just a few media companies. Back then, it was something like 30. Now there's like two, you know?
Yeah.
and so when you've got a few people controlling all the narrative, desktop publishing was blowing up, and we were creating zines. They could be anything from like typed on a typewriter and photocopied to professionally produced. And so I'm going back to print. It's shadowzine.com. There's been 8 issues so far. Each one's written by a different author. I wrote one, and each one is like a mini book, full color, printed. I don't sell digital copies. There's none of that. You pay online, you get it in the mail, because that's something that can't be controlled, can't be edited, can't be throttled up or throttled down by search engines. And I'm going to see if it catches on. And so far, it's been pretty interesting. There's been people that are just sort of embracing this idea of putting your phone down and holding something real again.
Yeah.
So I'm open to new authors and new stories, and you know, we're going to keep this going and see where it goes.
Right on. It sounds like a wonderful idea. I mean, it's, you know, everything old is new again, right? You have kids that are lining up outside in New York for like 100 deep to take photos in a photo booth, right? You've got people who are wanting real tangible things again. I think Shadow Scene's a wonderful idea.
Look, man, we were talking earlier about, you know, AI and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Two things that I've noticed. I'm on my story tour right now, so I'm doing stuff every night. The crowds are bigger than they've ever been. And I'm, you know, sure, I'd love to take all the credit for that. But I think part of it is that people just want real experiences. And when you go see someone real in person, whether it's a band or a performance of any kind or a storyteller or whatever, it's real. You're getting something real. It's not AI. It's not generated. It's not, you're not on your phone. You're taking part in society. And I think my hope is that we can get back to real stuff, because it matters. It matters quite a bit. And I think those real experiences may just save us from ruin.
Most definitely. By the way, folks, if you want to see an excellent storyteller in person, funny, engaging, great at what he does and tells amazing stories, Jeff is one of the best storytellers out there, not just in the paranormal, but in general, whatever, any stories in general. Jeff will have you on the edge of your seat, and you can go and get this book right here, Wicked Strange, signed in person, when you go see Jeff in person as well. So make sure you check Jeff's website. We'll have a link to his website in the description of this program, so you can go see Jeff wherever he's appearing and go get a copy of this book signed. So there you go. So, Jeff, I want to thank you so much for being with us today, man.
Thanks, Tim. Good to talk to you again. It's been a minute.
It has been a minute. It has been a minute. So we'll have you back very, very soon, because I miss these little talks. That's for
sure. Know. Anytime, man. Anytime. Yeah. We just got to survive the, you know, spooky holiday season, and we'll be back at it.
That's right. We shouldn't eat too much candy, because, you know, you get that diabetes, I hear. That's what I hear.
I know.
That's for sure.
It's so hard, though. That's what's keeping me going, man. But yeah, great to see you again. And thanks. Thanks for the chat.
Great to see you too, my friend. That'll do it for today, folks. A couple of notes before we take off. One, if you're listening to this program on audio, you're not watching it on video, well, you know, we can still rectify that. Go to YouTube, the original Darkness Radio on YouTube, or go to darknessradioshow.com. Click on the show you want to watch. The video and audio are right there on darknessradioshow.com. We mentioned the Apple app earlier. The Darkness Radio Apple app is available at the Apple Store. If you don't have the Apple app on your Apple device, you can download it at the Apple Store. Or if you have it, go ahead and update it. I believe iOS 26 is coming out soon with the Apple 17 phone and all the other different devices that are coming out here at the beginning of the month. So by all means, folks, it's time to update. Let's do it. Our friends at Mysterious Adventures Tours have two tours that are coming up for Halloween. Go to darknessradioshow.com, the events page. Check out the Halloween trips with Dacre Stoker and Brian J. Cano going to Romania and to Ireland. Dacre is taking you to Romania for 12 days. You're going to party at Bran Castle, Dracula's Castle, for Halloween, and go with Brian J. Cano to Ireland, the Pooka Festival, for Halloween. Those two trips are available and financing's available. Check out those events at darknessradioshow.com at the events page. And lastly, it is the weekend. Thank God it's Thursday, but thank God Friday's coming tomorrow. The weekend is coming up. If you're going out to any of the Renaissance festivals or enjoying the nice weather this weekend, be sure to take somebody with you who is disabled or elderly. Take them out with you and show them a good time. Sometimes it's hard to get out of the house and enjoy yourself when you've got a bit of a disability. Be a light in someone's darkness this weekend and do yourself and someone else a favor. It's a message from your friends here at Darkness Radio. For Beer City Bruiser, for Mally Fox, for Jessica Freeberg, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for being a listener and a viewer and a contributor to this show. We love you so much for being part of our family here at the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paul Azan, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.